this time in the studio, I felt that there was a kind of reverence from my collaborators for the literal feminine and the sort of energetic feminine that wants to bring us into like a prayer state, you know, myself included. You know, all the men that I was working with are huge fans of like Alice Coltrane. And I think her becoming more popular, her work becoming more mainstream in a way, I think gives a model for like what energetically I'm trying to work with in the studio. It gives me a model too. I did not have a model when I was in the indie band, Brooklyn band, back in early 2000s.
That was Kim Kranz, and this is Sheeros, a podcast with a mission to turn up the volume of women's voices in music across genres and generations. Sheeros is a deep dive into the experiences and perspectives of women and gender expansive folks in a still overwhelmingly male-dominated music industry. It's a space where we discuss challenges and triumphs, how far we've come, and how far we still have to go. Telling our stories is the first step to making music better for everyone. I'm Carmel Holt. Like many folks, I got to know the name Kim Kranz through her incredible visual art and deeply insightful writing in the Wild Unknown decks and guidebooks. For newcomers, tarot decks and oracle decks are a set of cards that are used for personal exploration and ritual. That's, of course, an oversimplified definition, but the Wild Unknown is a series of four hand-drawn oracle decks by Kim Kranz: the Wild Unknown Tarot, Animal Spirit Deck, Archetypes Deck, and 2022's Alchemy Deck. She's also published children's books, an illustrated journal, a graphic memoir, and most recently, a board game called Renunciation, released last year. Her bio, as it reads on her website, says, Kim received her BFA in drawing at Cooper Union in NYC, MFA in mixed media at Hunter College, and an MA in Jungian depth psychology and creativity at Pacifica Graduate Institute in California. Her seeker's heart has brought her to study in-depth practices of classical hatha, kundalini yoga, and classical shamanism in India, Africa, Europe, and the UK. Kim teaches events and workshops that activate the forces of creativity and radical transformation through art, meditation, mysticism, and movement. Though revered for her drawings and publications, Kranz is also a multimedia artist, filmmaker, and musician. After talking to Kim Kranz, I realized that the last word of her bio, musician, in a sense, should have been the first. Prior to creating the Wild Unknown Tarot in 2012, Kim Kranz was part of an indie rock project called Family Band, who put out their debut EP in 2008, followed by two full-length albums, one in 2010 and the second in 2012. They were gaining critical attention and touring, opening for bands like Warpaint. 2012 was also the year that Kim Kranz self-published The Wild Unknown Tarot. And as it turned out, The Wild Unknown became a global sensation. Kim left the band, and the deck and guidebook were released with HarperCollins in 2016, landing on the New York Times bestsellers list. And today, The Wild Unknown Tarot is available in over 10 languages. But as Kim tells it, even with all of this success, there was a heartbreak around leaving music behind. And in today's episode, we'll hear Kim Kranz share her decade-long Sheeros journey to finally opening the door once again to writing, recording, and releasing her first solo album, Mirror, Mirror. When Kim first joined me on the line, I started our time together uncovering some mutual connections that we might have, and I asked her if she knew Sharon Van Etten. It opened the door to this story.
I was in New York, kind of at the end of like a 12-year stint of like artists trying to make it in New York. And I was out trying to find a parking spot, heating up the car in the winter. I'm sitting there just spacing out in the early morning, and Love More comes on the radio. And I just cried so hard in the car by myself. And I looked around and I could feel New York and Brooklyn. And I was like, it's time to leave. And that song, something about it just like helped me be okay with loving New York and having to leave. And that's when I left and moved to Philly and drew the Wild Unknown Tarot deck and that really changed the trajectory of my creative career and my band and all things. And I actually kept using that song. I would listen to it, like what I like call actively listening to it as like almost like a therapy. I would lay down and really actively listen to that song almost every day for a couple of months because I knew it was like doing something to my system that was really important. It's also the sound of the harmonium on that song is like really a big deal.
Told her that story?
I don't think I've ever told Sharon that story. No. We stay in touch every once in a while and we always kind of like thank each other for our work and bless each other's work, but I haven't ever told her that story.
It's so interesting. Like I've tried to gather all of the pieces of your story and that's a piece I have not heard before. And it feels like
the Sharon piece?
Yeah. And maybe I've just missed it when you've told it before, but
I've never told that Sharon story before.
Yeah.
And that song really blasted something open for me. And I think it, you know, it's of course Sharon and that message of the song, but also the way the harmonium, like the trem of the harmonium and the trem and the drone at the same time of that instrument. I'd never played a harmonium before, but something about the sound, I feel like it just called to me in a pretty deep way. And then I ended up playing the harmonium was like the bass instrument that I played when I quit Family Band, my old indie band in Brooklyn, and started to like chant and learn mantra and play music in more of like a prayerful, devotional way. It was the harmonium that allowed me to not judge myself as a musician and not get involved in like a, well, is this a song? Is it going to be on a record? Is there going to be a record label? You know, all the zillions of questions that come for me really quickly as soon as I touch an instrument and I get psyched on a melody. You know, in like 5 minutes, I'll be like, well, do I need to start a new Instagram account for like my music project? And I haven't even really felt the chorus of the song yet. So it's so easy to disrupt the creative process in that way. But the harmonium held me with its drone just in these really simple chords. And then I could sing and chant over them. And then it would be like 40 minutes passed, an hour passed. And I didn't even quantify or qualify it as music or a song. I didn't need to because I could feel the resonance in my system had changed. And that's where the new record Mirror Mirror kind of came out of that ability of the harmonium to like hold me somewhere creatively without me getting worried about what these things were as like essentially products or, you know, songs that the algorithm reads and labels try to determine what their success trajectory is going to be.
We've already covered so much ground. I'm just going to take this moment to pause and say, Kim Kranz, my Shiro, welcome to Shiro's.
I'm so psyched to be here.
Congratulations on Mirror Mirror. And I'm so excited to have this time with you. Listeners, I will share some photos of the tattoos that I have that are based on Kim Kranz's work.
Are you kidding?
The only tattoos I have are based on these. I'm getting chills right now. I've been waiting to meet you for years. So this is a big day for me.
So cool. I wish we would have met in New York. What were we doing all those years?
I don't know. And I have to ask, Do you remember what radio station you were listening to when you heard Sharon's song?
I actually don't know.
Wouldn't it be weird if you were listening to the radio station that I used to be on in New York?
I would not be surprised.
That would be so crazy and cool.
It couldn't have even been like a podcast internet radio at that point because I was in like an old shitty Benz.
Right.
It was like a literal local radio station.
Yeah, like it was probably WFUV.
So you probably played that song that morning. And made all of this occur, potentially.
Let's just pretend, even if it's not true, because I love this, let's just pretend that we were connected from that moment.
This is a concept I am so obsessed with lately, is like that potentially happening and the impact that we all have. And we have no idea. Like you playing a certain song on the radio can impact a listener in a way that you can never estimate. And those things just go out in the world and sometimes we get to know like whatever's happening here, potentially the loop closes, but mostly we don't get to know as artists how things impact us.
Right.
And that's like, you know, I feel lately just so engaged with like getting artists to make things and complete things because it really helps other people in ways that we can't see and we don't get to see because it's like a unique destined path of the art to move out and change people.
Let's get to a clip of a song here. If you were going to direct someone to an entry point for Mirror Mirror, what would it be? And why?
If you're willing to lay on the floor, I would say turn on the first track, Sister, because it really is a kind of invocation or a spell, a door opening for the rest of the record. And basically the idea is just let yourself move into a dream. And it's like a familiar dream. It's your dream. There's images in it that maybe haven't been visited in a while, but there's this sort of like landscape that we all have that's inside of us that we can only go into when we're kind of relaxed and you move into a dreamlike state. And that state is a place that I visit as frequently as I can because it's where I find all the imagery from my drawings, the lyrics, the knowing of what to do next in my life, certain people like I want to work with this person or I got to call this person and tell them such and such. It's this really sort of slippery, lucid space. And so that song is designed to both in its rhythm, it has a theta-inducing rhythm, and by its hypnotic lyrics to move people into that state so that they can like listen to the rest of the record through like a dreamlike lens.
Kim Kranz is our guest today on Shiro's. Her album is called Mirror, Mirror, and that's track one called Sister. And I love that you already led us into something that I wanted to touch on, which is the intentionality of the rhythms that you chose for this album. I've heard you talk about how some of these rhythms were something that you use for your own walking meditations. And then there's this relationship between rhythm and sound and shifting your brain waves. That's really cool. You mentioned the theta. I didn't even know about alpha and theta brain waves. So can you break all that down for us a little bit and take us into that aspect of shaping Mirror, Mirror? What is it that you are gifting us that we may not even be aware of in the music and in the sound patterns?
Well, it's going to sound maybe really far out to some listeners, and other listeners will be like, yes, of course. But there's rhythms that induce a certain state in the mind, and that can be tracked through brain waves. And if you're trying to fall asleep, you can find a Delta track on Spotify or whatever. But if you look back, these ancient wisdom traditions were also using rhythm to induce certain states, and shamanic states most specifically is the path that I have been interested in the last few years. And the teachers that I studied with, they use this method called tanging, which is to strike a metal surface. I think it's like 7 beats per second or something, and repetitively. And it just creates this sort of high frequency rhythm that sets the mind into an alert but dreamlike state. It's kind of like yoga nidra, where there's heightened awareness, but the system is relaxed and you can move into like the field. And it's super cool. They use it while they're doing a walking meditation. So as we started to build the record, you know, I had no intention, I mean, I guess some part of me did, in putting mantras or these rhythms on the record. But each day when I would start in the studio with the producer, Kevin Ratterman, I would do the walking meditation. You know, before we would start, we'd be setting stuff up in the studio and I'd go do my thing and I'd come back. And then we realized as we were building the songs out, like, hold on a sec, that rhythm wants to be in this song, actually, literally. It's not like, oh, I do my work outside of this, you know, recording, and then I come over here and I make like an indie jam. I was like, wait a sec, this stuff wants to seep in, actually. And I couldn't believe it, but like the mantras started to, I could hear them under the songs. Like, you know, when I wrote the song Mercury, it's a straight up just like love song, verse, chorus, that's it. It wasn't supposed to be like a epic jam with a breakdown with a mantra. And that's just what ended up happening with that song, because it was like these aspects of my own practice wanted to come through the work. And it was like, okay, I guess I'm just going to open the gates and like show people, or they'll be able to hear some of the sounds that I work with in my own spiritual practice and also as I'm making my art. You know, they're sounds that I rely on, they're mantras that I rely on as if they're people and allies, like on my team, that help me get from point A to point B when I'm stuck. So that's kind of a vision of how the rhythms came to be on the record.
And of course, now I have to play a clip of Mercury, which is my favorite song on the album.
Thank you.
Mercury. Kim Kranz here with us on Shiro's. The new album is called Mirror Mirror. And we were talking about how you connected your spiritual work with sound, how it ended up finding its way, was calling to you to be integrated into these songs. And we started this conversation today talking about Sharon Van Etten's Love More, hearing that on the radio and this crossroads where you were in an indie rock band that was getting liftoff and you closed the door. Now you're opening a door again to music a decade later. That's what Mirror Mirror is. But as you say, rather than creating indie jams, all of the parts of you are finding their way to a more integrated place, it feels like. But there's a lot of journey in between. So can you tell your story for us a little bit, how you got from point A to point B?
You made it sound so great. Just to clarify for the listeners, the road was very unclear and it was painful. It was sad, you know, to quit the band. And I was blessed to have the Wild Unknown tarot deck, like taking all of my attention, and the success of that artwork opened up a lot of things for me. But there's this part of me that was so heartbroken not playing music anymore. And seeing friends and crew keep going with the path, whether it was Sharon, you know, or Kevin Morby or Matthew from Phosphorescent, they just kept going on the path. And I was like, oh shit, now I'm over here making my art and working really hard on my visual work. And it feels important, but like, you know, I didn't touch a guitar for like 8 years. I didn't have my lips on a microphone, except for like an occasional podcast, for like 8 years. It's like a big fucking deal when you know what it's like to be on stage and hear in the monitor, you know, things sound good. It's like it's working, and to feel that elevated sense of what sound can do to like move people in a room and to be with a band and to build sound together. And then I'm like, oh shit, I'm in my art studio. It's just me and my pen here, and I'm drawing stuff. I know it's important, but I can't feel that feedback and that sound that I was craving. So it made like zero sense to me in terms of finances and sort of career trajectory. But some point deep in COVID, I was like, I have to make these sounds, these chants, these melodies that are coming forward when I sit down at the harmonium, which was the only instrument I was playing at the time. I have to share them. So I started just doing voice memos and sharing with my friend Tim Showalter from Strand of Oaks. And he was like, Kim, you have to make a record. Like, you know, he's such a sweet man. He said, like, the world misses your voice. And I was like, fuck. I got to show up in this space. I have to just do this thing, even though I'm like, you know, late 30s, maybe I was 40 at that point. I'm like, what am I doing? And I had to just set all of that aside and just be like, one verse at a time, one song at a time. Let's just see what wants to occur here. And thankfully, at that point, I had this spiritual practice, which for me is more about strengthening me. It's not like, I want to get enlightened. It's like, no, how can I get strong and clear so I can keep moving through this world with the creativity that I know I have to deliver while I'm alive? How can I find practices that just help me deliver what I'm here to deliver? So I don't want to go away and out of my body and sort of like exit or escape. I want to get strong and clear. I want to find the people that will help me so I can do what I'm here to do. So at that point, I had this spiritual practice to like strengthen me, give me courage so that I could get into the recording studio. And then Tim introduced me to Kevin Ratterman, who is like the perfect collaborator for this record. And, you know, the whole thing feels like it barely happened. Like I had just barely enough confidence to make that phone call to Kevin and say, let's book the studio. Just barely enough confidence to like, oh, there's this guitar riff I feel like needs to be, or here's a bass line like I envision for Sister. And not being in the studio and for so long and not considering myself a musician for so long, I had to rally all my spirit to be like, yo, Kev, but this is the bass line. So the whole thing, I feel like, was very, very precarious and held up by people who supported the record, you know, including Jim James on Spinning Sun, that were just like, Kim, you got to make this thing happen. So I'm forever grateful for the crew that, like little angels, just like came into place and supported the creation of the record.
Let's listen to a little bit of Spinning Sun since you brought it up. Do you want to tell us anything about this track specifically other than Jim James supporting you vocally?
Spinning Sun is just a query of that feeling of falling in love of like, this is so amazing and it's totally out of control. Like I'm upside down and it's like what everyone fantasizes of, but it's totally sketchy. You know, there's a lot of songs on the record to planets and the cosmos. And this one really was just like thinking of how we all move around the sun in our solar system, our planets. And yet, like in our lives, we also have like these central suns that we pivot around, you know, certain themes or people or family or loves that hold us in place, even when we're like turned around and upside down. So yeah, it's a loss of gravity song in a way. Spin me round in you. I go upside down with you. Turn me.
Kim Kranz here with us on Shiro's, and her new solo record is called Mirror Mirror, and that's Spinning Sun. I'm Carmel Holt. You were talking about your collaborators on this album, and me being me and it being Shiro's, of course, I can't help but notice gender because that's part of what we're here to discuss. I was curious to hear about your journey in that way, maybe compare and contrast. Have you noticed any differences both in the music making and how you feel about being the only woman in the room, if I could be so bold as to assume that? And then maybe how it was back in the day when you were in Family Band. I'm not 100% sure, but I feel like you were the only woman in that band as well. Am I getting that right?
I was.
All right.
I'm like, you just can of wormed this whole thing right here.
Oops.
I'm like, woo, Pandora's box. Whoa.
Oops.
This is a fascinating topic. It's a very deep one. It's really hard to talk about or know how to talk about it. But I will say that this time in the studio, I felt that there was a kind of reverence from my collaborators for the feminine, the literal feminine, and the sort of energetic feminine that wants to bring us into like a prayer state, you know, myself included, in a way that, you know, all the men that I was working with are huge fans of like Alice Coltrane. And I think that model, her becoming more popular, her work becoming more mainstream in a way, I think gives a model for like what energetically I'm trying to work with in the studio. It gives me a model too. I did not have a model when I was in the indie band, Brooklyn band, back in, you know, early 2000s. The other models of bands were just limited. They were just like dudes in a van. And interestingly, I don't even know if we knew what we wanted in that band, any of us, individually or collectively. And there are other bands I look back at and I'm like, oh, at least one in that crew just wanted to be famous. They just wanted to move the machine forward. And at least those bands like knew what they were aimed for. I think our band, if you were to break it down sort of psychically, we all wanted different things for different reasons. And I wasn't ready yet as a woman to be the front woman of that band. I mean, my emotional intelligence, my sort of psychic, my ability to hold something together and present on stage, I was almost there, but I would get sort of pulled back and out if there was ever a discrepancy in the band, which there definitely was. I mean, I was in a band with my ex-husband and 2 to 3 other men. We were all just sort of a different mindset at that time. It was like, you know, super wasted and just art punk kids trying to make sounds and sort of get ahead and get enough money to do the next show. And I did not have a spiritual practice at that time. The breaking of the band was what led me, you know, to the ashram and to find this sort of deeper spiritual thread that could hold me up, like I was saying earlier, strengthen me in these instances where if you have like a sort of douchebag drummer, not to be like stereotypical here, but
call it,
who's kind of giving you shit, you're just like, oh, I actually don't care. Because I'm moving this band forward. You know, I wrote the songs. I make the music videos. I am holding the vision for this creative project. I'm collaborating with other people. They are so important. It's immeasurable. But I am holding the vision. And I wasn't ready to step into that and fully claim that. So the dynamics that went down, which were very complicated and heartbreaking, were as much on me, because I wasn't quite ready yet. And they weren't quite ready yet to break their paradigm. I wasn't quite ready to step into my new paradigm. So it's a storm. It's just a storm. And so with this record, some of those old things came up in the studio while recording, of course, and I just tried to move through them. Like, Kim, you're different now. You're working with different people. And my old bass player, Scott Hirsch, actually was in the studio. He is the through line through this whole thing. I made some demos with him before we made Mirror Mirror. And he's been a really beautiful through line to say like, oh, actually, you don't have to close the door to everybody. There are folks that are willing to span these changes that we all go through and watch each other change. So I think without getting too deep into the mud, that's how I would answer that question. I had to change too. It wasn't about the men that I was collaborating with changing. I had to be willing to shift my own vision.
So if you were to imagine your ideal scenario of collaborators in a studio setting, or, you know, when and if you take this into a performance situation, do you have any different ideas about who you might want to choose? There's no right or wrong answer, but would it be important to you or not to have more of a balance? Would you want more women or non-binary people to be along for the ride with you, collaborating with you?
It's a great question. It's like, my first priority is to find the people that get it. So that's like top level. Mm-hmm. And it's actually kind of hard to find the people that understand, like, I'm not interested in a rock show performance. I'm an artist. I'm an art performer, a performance artist who studied shamanism extensively, and I'm in love with sound, and I'll use sound and visuals as a vehicle to get everybody on board so we can go somewhere together. So it's about creating a collective hypnotic sort of trance state so we can move into the dream. So if anyone has too much of an ego about it being a rock show, it gets very confusing. You know, right now the hurdle is like finding the sort of venue and the spaces and the crew that wants to come on board and stay true to that vision. Like, this is healing oriented without being like a new age thing in a yoga studio. We're using art to get to a coherence together and move us all into a dream. So it's like just finding that crew has been like a fascinating endeavor in and of itself. They seem to be like finding me, but that's my top priority. And then if they have some kind of like their own practice, which likely they do if they get it, that's my second priority. And then their identity, their background, their own unique positioning is going to be the third thing. I always think of it as like the blueprint of them or their snowflake, you know, their unique shape and orientation.
That makes so much sense. Yeah. When you were stepping back into making music, what was the first moment? Like, what did that look like for you? I heard you talking about the layers of the closet.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it occurs to me that the gift in taking these risks or being brave or courageous in breaking through some of these blocks and then being in a place where then you're sharing that with other people is such good circle work. It's like back to the beginning of this conversation, you don't know how this is going to land for the people hearing and who needs that so much. You know, there could be somebody on the receiving end who, just like you, put it all down because fill in the blank. And, you know, by hearing your story, are inspired to push back through some of the clothes and layers in the closet.
Yes. I mean, in my doubtful hours, I relied on, this is something I haven't really talked about, but the first person to get me on a big stage was a musician named Sam Jane, who played in a band called Love is Laughter. And Sam passed during pandemic. He died early, and it was a devastating death for a lot of people in the music industry. And for me, creatively, he represented something to me, and he saw something in me, and he exalted something in me that I wasn't ready to exalt in myself. Like, he had me on a stage, you know, Webster Hall, like opening for Modest Mouse, backup vocals for him. I had like no business being on that stage. But he was like, no, Kim, you're singing with me. I didn't even have a band yet of my own. But he heard something in my voice and he saw something in me that was like, I want to move this person into the spotlight in my project. And when he passed, I felt like he gave me an assignment of like, you have to complete this record. Like, I actually don't care any of your excuses. And I sat there on the piano, you know, it was like deep COVID isolation. Sam had just died. It was fucking snowing so hard in Brooklyn. And I would just sit there and look at the snowfall and play these melodies and these loops over and over and over and just like, just do it for Sam. Just do it for Sam. Just sing for Sam. And I felt like he carried me through all of the difficult junctures of this record in his like spirited way of just like, you know, just sing, Kim. And that was how I did it. That if we think of art making as like a sort of, you know, alchemically like a little recipe, what does every project need in order for us to get it from point A to completion? This was a particularly challenging project because it had all this baggage and all this stagnation, you know, a decade of stagnancy over it. So the world and the psyche had to deliver me a certain set of like really intense things that I could rely on to like keep moving forward as an artist. And, you know, heartbreakingly, Sam's passing was like a mega wake-up call for me creatively of like, I have to make what I need to make here while I'm living. And it's very evident that one of my tasks here is to find new ways to pray. And one of those ways is through sound. And it's an atypical prayer. It's a surprising prayer, even for me. It has to come in a surprising way so we can get there without feeling like we're going to church, you know? It's a non-denominational, non-defined kind of devotion to being alive. And that's what I found through kind of the hard edge that one faces when someone leaves this world. You're like, oh, Sam will not write more songs. Like, it's fucking crazy. No more Sam Jane songs. So I played his funeral. Was the first time I was on stage in 10 years in Brooklyn. 10 years. I sat on stage. I took my harmonium. I set it up. Everybody from my old band was there, my ex-husband, all my old bandmates. First time we'd seen each other in a really long time. And I had everybody sit down on the floor. It was at Union Pool. And it's just fucking so brutal, you know? And I covered his song. Everyone was there to cover their songs. And I played this beautiful song called Pulsar Radio. And I just simply did the best I could for Sam. And that playing the harmonium that day was like, it broke the spell of, you know, me not performing on stage. And it got me ready. I had just started recording in the studio with Kevin. And, you know, the whole thing, I kept Sam's photo in the studio when we were making work. We just light a candle for him. It's just like, this whole thing's for Sam. You know, it's for me, but it's for Sam. And I just have to move forward. One step in front of the other.
I'm so sorry for your loss. And thank you so much for sharing that. I almost started to cry myself.
I'm like, I did not mean to talk about this. But I think it's important, actually. People have such a fantasy about how things get made creatively. And I feel like I've always been here to like tell a truer story that, you know, things get made by the skin of our teeth. And we have to rely on as many resources as possible. And sometimes that comes in like really hard, challenging forms. We have to keep using what we can to move forward.
Last night, I was listening to, I forget what podcast it was that you were on. I have a housemate. She's my best friend. And we're both enormous fans. You have to know we have like giant girl crushes on you. And
I love a girl crush.
And we were listening to you speak. First, you have such a beautiful voice in every way. Speaking, singing, your written word. Your voice is really singular. And
Thank you.
You're welcome. And Jessica was saying she's also clearly been through it. She's also clearly had hardship because you don't get to the place that you are, unfortunately, or fortunately, or whatever. I don't even want to label good or bad without going through, you know, these things in life and coming out the other side and what you channel it into. Like, that's the stuff, you know, like I said, circle work. I just wanted to really acknowledge that and reflect back to you since we're talking mirror, mirror, the mirror that's landing in a big way. Again, even though you don't know it or you may know it, I don't know, but without even really knowing you that well, you know, you're being heard, you're being felt. It's a true gift. I know it's so hard. It's funny how these things sort of also end up cycling, like, you know, the band Slater Kinney, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know them personally, maybe?
I don't know them personally. Okay. But big fan. Big phase of my art school.
Oh my God. Are you kidding? Who isn't? So this new album that they just put out called Little Rope, Carrie Brownstein just lost her mother in the process of making the record. And perhaps you know the story already. Her mother and stepfather died suddenly in a car accident on vacation in Italy. And Corin, her bandmate, was the one who received the phone call because she was on an emergency call list. So the embassy was calling her. Then she had to tell Carrie. And then they proceeded to continue to make this record. And it was so inspiring to hear both of them from their two perspectives talk about what this very intense emotional landscape did to the music that was already in progress, that it got filtered through this new intensity, this new kind of feeling broken open that it wouldn't have had otherwise.
And it's such a big deal.
It's such a big deal.
I was just thinking about this meditation teacher I had really back in the day. And he said this thing about creativity, because he would have us lay on the floor and like listen to Mozart and stuff, which isn't that typical for a meditation teacher. This was at the ashram, so they can be very sort of rigid about like the practices. But I asked him once, like, what do you think it is about art or music that moves people and heals people? And he said, art and music do two things simultaneously. First, they tell the listener or the viewer, I, like you, have been where you are. So essentially, we're the same. I know you, I feel you, I hear you. And then the second thing is, and I can take that from the underworld where I have been, and I can transmutate it, and you are now hearing the sound of my transmutation. So essentially, the thing you are going through is the seed of the creativity that wants to be heard. It's going to deepen the sound. It's going to open the sound and move it into like a new level. And I'll never forget that. I was like, that is what creativity does. And we don't even notice it. But when you hear someone singing, you're like, they get it. And it's super subtle, this sort of like nonverbal understanding that if you hear Nina Simone, you're hearing all of Nina Simone's experiences, all that she had been through in the sound she's delivering in the current moment. It's really powerful.
I wonder, would you put Mirror Mirror in the world that you've built of the wild unknown? Do you see it as a piece? And if so, where does it fit within that world?
Funny. It's like you can see your hands right now and it's kind of helping me try to understand how it fits too.
I could see where somebody less willing or able to understand or welcome multidisciplinary thinking might be like, but you are a this, and how are we going to promote this? And I don't really know what this is. And it's an album. But like, if you take a moment to really like zoom out and see it as part of this whole world, it's like, it's kind of an of course, right?
Yeah, like my mom's like, it's a no-brainer.
exactly. But, thank you for summing it up so quickly. Yes, it's a no-brainer. Yes.
It's like my mom's favorite phrase. But believe me, there's been plenty of people that are like, what are you doing? And this doesn't fit and people won't cross over. And you're a musician or are you an artist or which one? And you know, I feel like I've been facing that my whole life. But I think it's a resonance game, the whole shebang. And I think that there's a certain resonance in the wild unknown imagery. If you take a look at the sphere, the logo for the world card in the original tarot deck that I drew, that's an easy example of sensing resonance. Like it has a certain sound. The image has a sound. And that, if you start to look at art and like listen, you'll start to sense like, oh, this image or that artist has a certain resonance that they use and I relate to it. It's the same as a certain genre of music or a band. Like when Animal Collective came out, you're like, what the fuck is this sound? Like it was like, it was so broken and discordant and harmonious and then so cool.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know, 3 years later, we had all adapted to it. And that was a new sound that we could all fucking get really deep into. But they broke open a certain shape, you could say. You could see it as an image, what Animal Collective did. Or you could hear it, or you could try to describe it verbally, but it's all the same breakthrough. A discordance that it seems discordance, and then it leads to a new type of coherence that's like kind of deeper and wilder than we'd experienced. So when I'm making art, it all feels like the same. I'm trying to find the same energetic resonance, whether it's a drawing or it's a conversation or it's a chanting. I'm looking to like deepen the sound. However, just technically, logistically, I'm like solo drawing in my studio. So the satisfaction I can get from a drawing, you know, I love it. I'm always going to love it. But I want it to envelop me. And there's just a point of like craving of like, I want to be completely satiated by this resonance. And at some point, it becomes literally sound. Like, I want the drawing to make sound. I'm like, I guess I gotta get back in the recording studio. So that yearning for the creativity to like, how can this get more and more vast? That was really what led me into the music studio. And it's kind of the premise for the closing song of the record, actually, There's Always Sound. Because that was a song that came out of this realization that no matter what we're working with as creatives or as people in our lives, everything has an underlying sound current and frequency that is affecting us. It's a nonverbal thing. It's a non-literal thing, but we're responding to the frequencies at all times. So when shit is really crazy, there is always a sound to drop in, you know, in any tradition, spiritual tradition is going to be like the sound of the inhale and the exhale. And they're different from each other. And as soon as you drop into that subtlety, you're like, oh shit, okay. That is my sound. My inhale and my exhale is my sound. It's my first sound. It's my last sound. And everything else is sort of like, you know, a celebration on top of that, but that really is the base of it. So yeah, that song is an homage to that realization for me. There's always sound. There is always ocean.
There's Always Sound is the closing track on Kim Cran's new album, Mirror, Mirror. She's our guest today on Shiro's, and I'm Carmel Holt. This hour has totally flown by. I want to check in with you. How are you doing?
I'm great. There's so much more to say, and we've just journeyed so far. So
I know. I always wrap these episodes by asking my guests to make a wish. Shiro's magic wand wish. So I would like to bestow upon you, Kim Cranz, a Shiro's magic wand with which you could change anything in the music industry for women and non-binary folks. What would you change?
I would change the algorithm. I think the wand could do that. I would change the algorithm so that it didn't keep supporting that which was already supported and deemed important by a certain set of variables so that surprises could occur and underdogs can be heard and seen and pop up here and there so that things are able to reach listeners in the way that songs have reached me in my past, which wasn't about their popularity. You know, there's, of course, certain records that got popular, but I was also able to, like, go to other music and, like, find weird shit and listen to weird tracks by experimental artists that were not popular, that weren't really moving numbers, that had zero platforms. And a lot of those works just affected me. So that would be my wish, that the algorithm would break open and surprise itself with its dysfunction and chaos that led to miracles, especially for those artists that are really just starting out and making things and feeling like, I don't have the platform, so why should I make anything or finish the song or whatever? That is really heartbreaking to me, and it's got to be changed because it's so important that we're all making things. And the algorithm will tell us otherwise, and it's the fucking trickster at its core, and it needs to be known as such so that we can keep making things and sharing them with 3 people or 5 people or 30,000 or 3 million. And you also never know how you and your creativity is going to impact people after you leave this planet. It's not your business to know. It's not your business to evaluate it now. It's just your business to make the things while you're here.
Take us out with a song, please.
With that, oh, let's go with Golden Tears. If you haven't cried yet, folks, both of us have a little bit. Go out with that one and we'll all have a collective cry to just work the kinks out so we can move on, be more clear. Take my guards.
With thanks to Kim Kranz, what an honor, what a pleasure to have you here. Please come back soon. Congratulations on Mirror Mirror.
Thanks so much, Carmel. What a conversation.
Massive thanks to Kim Kranz for being with us. Mirror Mirror is out now. And for more on Kim Kranz and the Wild Unknown, check out kimkranz.com. Shiro's is produced by me, is mixed and mastered by Kelly Drake. Our original theme music is by Lucius. Shiro's is also a nationally syndicated radio show. You can visit shirosradio.com to find out more and support our work with Patreon or merch from the Shiro's shop. Keep in touch on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Carmel Holt, or find us at Shiro's Radio. And please consider leaving us a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. That helps us grow and bring you more Shiro's. Until next time, remember, music is our superpower. I'm Carmel Holt. Thanks for listening.